Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace.
Of raising a girl in today's world feels daunting, which is why I'm so grateful for my wife, Tara Mattson, and the Helping Moms Raise Confident Daughters courses from Christian Parenting. In these courses, you'll be guided through 8 monthly one-on-one dates and intentional conversations to deepen your relationship with each other while you help your daughter grow in confidence. When you purchase your course, you'll be equipped with monthly videos to help you understand exactly where your daughter is spiritually, mentally, and emotionally.
You'll also get a conversational guide to deepen your relationship during your set one-to-one dates and a downloadable journal to create and strengthen a connection with your daughter through the month. The best part is that there's a course for every age. So no matter what stage your daughter is in, you can have the tools to build a safe and trusted relationship where she knows you can listen and talk about the real issues concerning her.
Well, we have a key role to play in shaping how our daughters view themselves and their stories. I know these courses will help you and your desire to raise a confident, godly daughter. So register for your right course today. Visit cpguides.org to select your course today. That's cpguides.org.
Going through a loss of a marriage through death or divorce is difficult. And then trying to blend a family and create something new adds a whole other layer. The average blended family takes at least 7 years to blend. So today, if you hear anything, hear grace for the journey as we talk with a couple who truly gets this assignment.
Well, we've got Cliff and Bo Stern Brady today. And you might have heard Bo share last month about suffering well. Bo is the author of Beautiful Battlefields, When Holidays Hurt and Ruthless. She's been a pastor for a few decades and speaks nationally. And Cliff has got decades of experience as an executive in the high-tech industry. Together, they have 10 children and 6 grandchildren. And yes, their last name is Brady. You guys, it's so good to have you with us today. Welcome.
It's so good to be with you guys. Thank you so much.
I love it. So before we have you share your love story and how you two met, set the stage for the backdrop of your individual stories and what was happening, what you brought into the marriage, and then we'll dive into blending your families.
Yeah, well, I was married for 30 years and my husband got ALS in 2010 and died in 2015. And so I was his primary caregiver during that season and that journey and also trying to raise kids mostly on my own. He was an emotional support during that time, but he couldn't help in other ways. And so by the time I found myself truly single, I was nursing a lot of hurts, physical hurts from being a caregiver and doing that kind of demanding job for a long time. And then just some real fear about the future and how it would look and how would God show up in that space. I didn't intend to be a widow at 49 and the mom of 4. And my youngest was 15 at the time. So it was just a whole lot. It was a whole lot of story at that point. God was flawlessly faithful in it. But in terms of what I brought to the next phase of my life, it was really kind of a lot of nervous anxiety. And I had pretty much had an idea of, like, I was married to a good guy and marriage was really hard even then. And so I don't know that I'd ever want to tackle that again, especially with 4 kids that I love more than anyone else will ever love. So that's kind of how I went into the story.
So I was married for 24 years and the divorce process started in 2010 as well. And it was, honestly just a real surprise to me. Wasn't a divorce that I wanted. So it was certainly devastating from the perspective of losing your partner. For me, I think that the bigger worry was just whether my kids could survive a divorce or not. Feeling like this is going to blow up the entire family. And then, you know, historically for men, when you go through a divorce, of course, again, it's the loss of the partner, but also you're facing, typically, statistically, men are facing losing all influence on the big decisions in their children's lives around healthcare, education, and religion, and also losing majority time with your kids. In this case, I did get sole custody of my kids. It doesn't happen often for men. And so that put me sort of out there as a single man with six kids, learning how to cook, trying to kind of fill both roles. And yeah, I think what I brought into, you know, dating, which happened ultimately, was that, you know, I had absolutely no interest in it. And I, from my perspective, I thought, you know, who would want to date somebody with six kids? And if I were to ever date or remarry, do you remarry somebody who has no kids? Just because the math works out better, but then they have no backgrounds, you know, and no understanding around parenting. Or, you know, do you date somebody with kids? And I honestly, part of it too was I, you know, loved my kids and I wasn't sure if I could ever fall in love with somebody else's children, you know, in the way that I love my own kids. And so that was a real concern and kind of a frightening thing for me. But it was so far from my thinking that I actually think I was on a couple of dates and didn't know it. I got set off on dates. And once I realized that was happening, I was out. You know, it's not gonna happen.
You guys did a great job articulating kind of those individual stories. Let's go right now to that space of, well, how did you find each other here? And what was that like to begin this process, having both of those individual contexts that you just articulated so well?
Yeah, well, we knew each other in college just briefly. We had had one conversation when we were in college. And that was it. We'd never had connected since then. And so then later on, after my husband had died and his marriage had ended and all of those things, I knew that he had survived the loss of his marriage with the help of a large community. And I had had some people reach out to me and say, you know, people don't treat divorced people the same as they do widows. They support widows better than they do divorced people. And I know that to be true. I also think that there's a heart around single dads that maybe we haven't quite yet developed around single moms. Kind of an interesting little aside. But so I reached out to him and I asked him I was writing an article on how to care for your newly single friends. So I reached out to Cliff and I asked him if he wanted to share any advice with me or anything on how his community had cared for him and his children during that time. And he wrote me back and it was such a wise, insightful, funny email that honestly, I think that we've texted every day since. We've talked every day since that day. It was very fast. Like, I was like, oh, this is someone I want to be friends with. That's just when I read it, I'm like, I want to be friends. He shares not my exact experience, but some of my experience and some of my history in terms of we had church connections and friend connections and stuff. And so we became friends then, is what we did.
That is what we did.
Yeah.
Do you want to add anything, Cliff?
And somewhere along the line, like 6 months later, we were like, he said, you know, why don't we just go on a date? Should we just go on a date and just like see? And I said, yeah. And then because of our life, it took us 12 weeks to be able to find a time where we could go on it. Because we live in different cities. We lived in Bend in Portland then. And so we had to like really work to get it on the calendar. And honestly, by the time we went on the first date, I would say we were in love. I do think that we intended and we decided we will fall in love fast, but date really slow. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did.
And I think after that suggestion that we go on a date, it was like ellipses. And then we both said,
oh no.
10. Kids. Yeah. We were doing the math early.
What are we doing?
With some overwhelm in there.
Yeah. What were the range of the ages of your kids at that time? When you think of the total
They were from 10 to 30, I think.
Wow.
10 to 32, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it. Well, Cliff, what was that moment for you? Because you were really not wanting to do the dating thing. And the moment you realized you were on a date, you were out. And what changed for you with Bo? And thinking about the someone who's listening and kind of going, I don't know when I'm going to be ready to date. What do you know what that moment was for you? Was it just that Bo's incredible or?
I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, I remember in our first date, we were at dinner and Bo asked, you know, a question akin to, what is this? You know, what are we doing? I know we're on a date. What is this? And I remember my response was just honest. I said, I'm smitten. And that happened, as Bo said it, very unexpectedly, very much against my will. or my will, you know, prior to that moment. And that really was it. It was easy. Mm-hmm. Communication was easy. It was really easy to be friends, immediate and easy and fun and important and, you know, beneficial. And then, yeah, it, you know, going from friends to falling in love just happened pretty magically.
Yeah. It was a fall.
You know, yeah, it was a fall. Yeah.
Oh, that, I'm happy for you guys. So let's talk about what was happening for the kids because they're on a very different trajectory.
Also a fall. And,
also a fall. So talk about that. What's that like for kids? How did you guys do it well? What mistakes did you make? Talk about that piece.
Sure.
We took a long time to introduce them. We wanted to know who we were before we made any of them deal with that. I did tell my kids early on, I have this friend who's a man I want you to know. And all of them to a person were like, oh, no, this is bad. And this was about a year after my husband died, a little more. And they were like, you're all we have. And I just had to be like, do you want to be all I have? Is that what you want? Do you want me to, you know, want to just spend every Christmas at your house and be every, you call you every day on my way home from work? Are you, do you really want to be everything to me? Because I'm young still. That's going to be a big load. And so we took time before we were ready to introduce them. One of the things we often say in this is that we dated for 3 years because it's like having boxes on the back of a flatbed truck. And if you take the corner too fast, some of them are going to fall off. And we knew that was the priority, that we could both date and fall in love and keep our kids intact and have all of them happy at the wedding. And they all were. They were our attendance. Mm-hmm. They were all in our wedding and they were wonderful, but we just took time. And so when you say, how did the kids do? 10 kids, 10 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
They had 10 different kinds of feelings about it. Some were excited. Kids, Cliff's family had waited longer. He had been mm-hmm. single for 6 years. So they were more ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think at least for the concept of me dating, several of them, the older ones in particular, were so ready. You know, or felt that I was ready and that I should. I remember about a year after my divorce, my oldest son saying, Dad, you need to get out there. You need to date. You know, you're still young and this could happen for you. And then one of my other, the younger kids pulled me aside and said, Dad, you know, I really respect Andrew, but I don't agree with what he said at all. Us kids need all of you all the time.
No pressure.
So that kind of sealed it. But by the time, you know, it was, so I was single 6 years before Bo and I started dating. So that was, you know, the time matters. The time lapse matters there. So they were more ready for the concept, but also kind of afraid of what this is going to look like. And, you know, I would say, and I have 5 boys and 1 girl, I am absolutely my daughter's person. And so I think, you know, as we go through, we don't have the time to go through the reaction to each, but in my family, that was the standout. Like, what does another woman in this family, you know, and am I being displaced? And so even when, I remember there was a time we went shopping with all the girls after Thanksgiving, right? Mm-hmm.
Black Friday.
And my daughter just stood next to me the whole time. She enjoyed it. But every time I turned around, I was running into her. You know, so it's kind of a statement, like, he's mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is okay that we're all together, but he's mine. And again, as Bo said, 10 kids, you know, when you look at like families who have 2 kids, 3 kids, you'll say they are so different, you know, and there's things that remind you of, you know, you and things that remind you of your spouse and 10 kids. So across the board, you know, such a variation and 4 people who, you know, who sort of contributed from a genetic standpoint, or actually six, because my daughter's adopted. So six different genetic backgrounds and two different family cultures growing up. They responded differently and not at all predictably. I would say early on, the one child who was the most resistant is now the one who is the most excited about having, a step-parent and all these step kids.
Yeah.
Or siblings.
And I did sit down with my kids before we officially went on a date. And I said, you have a distinct but small window of opportunity to stop this. If you say, I'm not ready, I will say, okay, we'll put it on the shelf for now. We'll stay friends. We won't move any further with it. If you're not ready right now, I can wait for that. I won't wait forever probably, but I can wait till you feel like you're ready. And they all to a person said, nope, you need to do this and we're with you. And so we worked hard for buy-in. We really did. We took time and we tried to include them in ways that mattered to get them to feel like they were a part of the story.
I hear that you gave them each a voice and that your kids actually have a relationship with each of you, that they could speak up, that they could have their own variety of opinion about it, and even honoring their ability to say not yet. That it takes a lot of maturity, and that's really hard when you're ready to want to move forward and move on. And you've got to also, you have these little lives. And even at 30 years old, they have opinions and it affects them. I think that's the other thing I've not walked through blended family myself personally, but walking with lots of adult children, I'm always very surprised at how hard it is for them, because I think they had the longest maybe journey with the first marriage. There's a different process of grief, but I appreciate that you each had a relationship.
Yeah, the trust that exists there is just standing out to me. The trust that you have with your kids before you joined together, the trust that the two of you were on mission to steward and to keep and to nurture is remarkable, you guys. It's just, it's rare. You know this, but it outside of your guys' lives, we want to just tell you that that's and that's beautiful, and I know it will encourage many people, because you're talking about 10 kids and grandkids, and I think that even needs to be acknowledged. And so it's not to minimize anybody else's experience. Yeah. It's just to say
it's possible.
Look at what is even possible when you have your hearts attuned to God and your hearts attuned to your kids, and you're taking time, you're stewarding, you're joining them and turning towards. That's beautiful. I want to ask, you dropped this a little bit, Bo, and I think it was just, it hit me and I thought I could come back to this. You said that maybe there's some room for growth in our society, in our Christian communities, in our churches, for attunement to single dads. We have done pretty good as it relates to women who've lost a spouse or to women who have been divorced and single moms in that space. But there may be something, I heard you say, that we might need to learn a little bit more about as it relates to the journey of a single dad. Would you guys speak to that for a second? I just think that's worth going a little deeper on.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that Bo was saying is... I think that people's heartstrings are pulled when it comes to being widowed, losing a spouse to death as opposed to divorce. Divorce, I don't know what the statistics are, somewhere around 50% of the time. So maybe there's a little less attention when somebody goes through a divorce and needs logistically exactly the same kind of help. On the flip side of that, as a man with especially such a large family that I was taking care of on my own, people acted so surprised. And there was so much like, oh, you're a dad raising six kids by yourself or raising children by yourself and working full time. How do you do that? Well, I always felt kind of guilty when I received that much attention for that, because they thought women do it all the time. So there's this sort of, I don't know what to call it, but not contradiction, but two-way sort of maybe deficit there, where we feel so badly for men who are raising kids on their own, or that's such a novelty that we get all sorts of help, and women do it all the time. And it, you know, there's not as much of a heartstring pull, I think. Is that kind of what you're
saying? Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think we treat widows like they've experienced a tragedy, and divorced people like they've experienced a consequence. And there's a whole big difference in the way we respond to a tragedy or a consequence. And there really ought not be a difference. People don't need to earn our compassion. And I think there is also just an undercurrent element that most of the people who reach out with the care are women, and sometimes they are reluctant to reach out to a newly single woman for fear of what that would mean, bringing a single person into the relationships in her orbit. And we just have to really grow up and get over that stuff. We just have to. We have to treat people who go through every sort of loss like Jesus would treat them. And that is that for me, just in the church, just looks like a real miss right now. Like, we're just not attuned to the needs yet of either single dads or moms in the same way. And it too, I even, as someone who people really loved me and reached out to me because I was a part of my church community for so long when my husband died, lots of people reached out to my kids with offers of, we're going to take you out, or we're going to whatever. And I know they meant it, but they just almost never actually did it. So I think there's that thing of just really supporting single parents in their journey, because it is a heavy one. Mm-hmm. It is a really heavy one.
Yeah.
And this is she's the communicator for a living.
You guys make a great team in that. Now, that was helpful to hear that kind of articulation. I think treating people with compassion for loss of a spouse and differently, and then in a divorce scenario, the consequence kind of approach. And I think that bringing that into awareness more and more is going to help any of the churches or any of the communities and anywhere where we go, just be aware of those kind of those tendencies. Close the gap, if you will, between what you communicate, caring for all people, and what you believe about how to be a compassionate person following Christ's example, and actually how you actually live that out and do that. Mm-hmm. So appreciate that, you guys. Thank you for that. There's some nuance there that I just felt we needed to come back to.
Okay, so let's continue in our blended family piece. Okay, what's one thing that has totally surprised you as you've been blending your family, and one thing that you kind of wish somebody warned you of, that you were like, this is going to happen, and you've seen that as a pattern maybe with other blended families that you connect with?
Well, I think what comes to mind first for me is, you know, we talked about what a surprise it was to fall in love with each other so quickly. I love my kids, and I love kids. I feel like I was built to be a dad, but I love other people's kids in a much different way than I do my own. You know, I mean, from baby on, they're way cuter than anybody else's kid. I mean, it's just how we're built. So I think the biggest surprise for me early on was how much I love her kids, how they really feel like mine. It reminds me, I talked about this a bit when I was reading my vows to her kids in our wedding, how when I had one child and was expecting a second one, I felt sorry legitimately for that second kid, because I thought, there's no way that I'm going to love him as much as I did the first. And my heart just sort of expanded. And that hadn't happened for years and years, 10 years. My youngest was 10 when we got married, but it happened again when I met them and they became a part of our lives. And so we were just joking about a little bit at a gathering this last Saturday, how the word step is kind of starting to recede from our vocabulary. We say step grandpa and step mom and, you know, step siblings. That I think for me, that was the biggest surprise.
Yeah, I think that was the surprise to me of the supernatural ability that God brings to replace the DNA part, that he can help with something that you just naturally got with your own kids. And he can come in with this other thing to help you love kids that aren't yours in a way that matters. And Cliff said to our kids on the day of our wedding, we did vows to each other's children, and he said, there is no replacement, Father, but I am God's loving response to your loss. And I really always love that and treasure that line, that we don't have to be the new mom or the new dad. We're just God's response to something that you've lost. I'm not going to replace all the things. You're not going to, but I'm here, and I'm a person who loves you, and I'm with you till the very end, no matter what. I am in your life till the very end. So that's been really fun. I think I think one of the surprising things is that we still have to really say we still keep the marriage first. Mm-hmm. And that's so clear when it's your biological kids. Yep. That you trust, we can keep the marriage first, but we both love the kids the same way. But when you blend a family, it's just a different thing. You feel kind of selfish keeping the marriage first, but we also know that all of our kids need to see that too. They need to see that our marriage is really, really important. Mm-hmm. And while we're wrapping in all these kids and all these other things, we really do prioritize time together. And that's one of the things that enabled us to wait a long time to get married, was because we both knew we weren't going anywhere. There was no pressure on either side. The kids were the priority in terms of when we got married, but we knew we were in it.
Yeah. And we weren't racing a biological clock. Yeah. You can cut that out of this if you want, but there was no, course sign an hour. So we could take 3 years, no problem.
But that is a case for some blended families, right? Where they're younger and they still want to have their own children together. So that Absolutely. Can be a pressure piece. Would you have any wisdom for those couples that you want to pass on?
Well, I just think the faster you feel you need to go, the more counsel you need to involve in it. Mm. You just have to have people speaking in from the outside, because one thing I hear from women all the time, I sit across the table from them, and whether they're a mom or not, they're dating someone they feel a little shady about, we're not quite sure, they always say the same thing. They say, it's complicated. And I think, oh, I hate those words, because it feels to me like this is you trying to twist yourself into something that isn't actually going to work. And so the great part about dating the second time around is you've got lots of data. I could see how Cliff raises his kids. I could see how he parents. I could see how so many things in his life were good. And so I just think that when you can see the data and you can see how someone lives, you understand and you can go with that. But if someone shows you who they are, believe them. If it doesn't look good, it doesn't have to be complicated. It just might be wrong.
It's good.
So you talk about the importance of keeping the marriage first, even in the blended family scenario. Can you give a practical example about when that was tested, right? Where one of your kids, for example, was needed to see that. They needed to see how you kept your marriage first. And maybe it was, again, not your biological, one of your not biological kids that was maybe impeding on that, or just an example of that.
I can't think of an example where they've kind of run up against that core value in a confrontive way. I think we've been really blessed with, you know, how easy that's been in terms of our kids seeing that, you know, Bo is really good for me, I'm really good for her. So, but I'd say, like, logistically for me, you know, one of the ways I really loved my kids on a day-to-day basis was to be with them and to cook for them every night. And, you know, this was something that I learned when I found myself, you know, a single dad, that I need to learn how to cook and cook well. So just from a logistical standpoint, I mean, there was a give and take there, right? Well, we make it, you know, it's very important to us that we get away together. So we'll go on dates often. It's a major line item in our budget. But and so I think there's been some give there for my kids. Three of my kids still live with us. All of those kids are grown and out of the home. So I guess that would be one way I'd say where they've had to make some concessions to be like, oh, dad's not here to cook for us. We need to learn to fend for ourselves a little bit. But it's never been a real big conflict. Not one of them has ever complained about it.
I think the other thing is just a little tiny one, but when we have lots of gatherings at our house, this is where they all gather to celebrate and to hang out and be a family together. And we have a ritual that we go to bed at about 8:15 because we just spend time together. We catch up on the day and we talk and we watch TV that we want to watch. And that's really time where we always come back together. And even when the house is full of kids, we're like, we're out.
That's a great example.
And they make fun of us. They make fun of us, but it's worth it. It's something that we do.
Yeah, those are great.
They like it. It's kind of when, you know, when you're a young couple and you have toddlers and you know, you hug your spouse, you kiss your spouse, and they act a little like, oh, yuck, but then they smile. I feel like we're still getting that response from, you know, our 35-year-old. And also things that they talk about how, you know, like, cute old people we are. But
get the such cute old people.
and the modeling that's happening there too. Yeah. You guys are gatherers of your people, and that you get to be that hub. And they're getting to see this happen, and it is. And we could go into that's a whole other podcast about how that looks. But that's beautiful.
Yeah. You're giving such beautiful examples and maybe practices that blended families and even just couples that aren't blended, right? Like they're young marrieds to start thinking about and building into their practices. Before we wrap up, would you think about the couple that's having a really hard time blending their family? It's complicated, Bo, but they've already committed to each other. They're married. What piece of advice would you leave that person? Because I can hear that person kind of going, great for you guys, but my situation's really hard. So one last piece of encouragement or advice that you want to give that couple.
Oh, he looked at me. No, I think one of the biggest things that we've really put into our life is core values. We have core values for our relationship and we try to really live by them and evaluate them. And one of them, probably our most important one, is stay curious about what the other person is feeling, especially in times where it just feels like this isn't working. Stay curious about what the kids are feeling. Instead of thinking you know, instead of thinking like curiosity trumps confidence. We want to be curious and know, what are you really feeling and where is this really coming from? The beginning of the end for Cliff and I is if we come into a conversation both entrenched in our positions. But when we come in really wondering, what is it that you're feeling and how can we get to common ground on it? It usually works. Well, so far, it's always worked out. Yeah. We're 100% on that.
Yeah. I would say too, with blended families, I mean, again, there's so many personalities involved. If one of the kids is struggling, I know one thing that we've observed and honored is that though, you know, my kids are very attached to Bo, her kids are very attached to me. And we could give you so many beautiful examples that, you know, my son asking Bo to walk him down the aisle in his wedding and these things. We know that it's not always perfect. And we know that our kids have more history with us. And so, especially in this home, you know, from a logistical standpoint, it's not a huge house. Bo really reads the room with regards to my kids. If she can sense that they need time with just me, she'll go upstairs. And there are, you know, certain ones who will be more open with just me. And the same with her kids. And there are some of my kids who will be more open with just Bo. So when there's some conflict and just trying to be sensitive and read the room and see how they're doing and avail ourselves individually, even if it's not the biological parent, I think that has worked well. Mm-hmm. And then I know we haven't done this within our marriage. I know a good friend who was really struggling with the step-parent relationship asked her stepkids to write her a letter, to each write her a letter. And I thought that was brilliant. And that just really opened up, you know, the communication between them. So I think just facilitating how communication works with each child or each kid's our young adults' personality and with the relationship that's already existed there somewhere between 16 and 35 years. Sometimes that's needed.
That's a great advice and practical for those that would be kind of like, how do I do this? It's not working. And, you know, you guys have street credibility to be able to share that. And it's attuning to individuals. It's turning towards. It's you modeling this. It's you working as a team to tackle and these lives and to support them in ways that are honoring. And sometimes that means you're one going forward, one with pulling back, but for the right reasons, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I hear in your hearts and your words, motive and method. And you guys are a great team. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Cliff and Bo, you're awesome.
We love you guys. So I'm thinking, Bo, you have these amazing books and resources. Where can people find your books if they are interested in learning more from you?
They're just all on Amazon and Bo Stern. My married name isn't on any of my books yet. So it's just Bo Stern and I'm at bostern.com.
Okay. And then do you have a resource that has been really helpful for you guys and blending your family that you would recommend to other families?
Well, with regard to marriage, we just really did the Gottman questions over and over again on it pretty much every day. We really asked each other a lot of questions while we were dating and getting, and we still do, while we're dating and getting to know each other to establish that baseline of, I don't know you yet, I want to know you. And so that has been our best little help.
So good. Gottmans, we appreciate them. So if you want to learn more about Living Wholehearted and all the resources from our professional counseling offices that can help you as you're moving through the loss of a first marriage or moving towards a blended family or resources for your children, go to livingwholehearted.com where you can meet our professional counseling team. And then you can learn also about all of our leadership development services, our books, our e-courses, and more. We're so grateful that you've decided to join in this weekly podcast. We hope to see you next week. And again, until we see you, be the leader you would follow.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.